here with Royal Special Assistant Rusty Kuntz. Rusty, what's your most common message to young players out here in Arizona, your go-to piece of advice?
Well, I think not only to the players, but to the coaches as well, is that, you know, we have to remember this is still a game. And there's two things that I was taught a long, long time ago. One, it's a hard game to learn, and it's even harder to play. And as long as you keep that in perspective, you know, you keep the fun in it. And from a player standpoint, we try to emphasize, look, you be you. You know, if you have an aggressive personality and you know that's your DNA or whatever, then show it. You know, if you're a passive guy and stuff like that, you know, you're going to have to probably get out of your shell a little bit and be a little more outgoing, you know, because that's just the nature of the game. But we try to, you know, try to take what players have and accentuate it. It's like, look, if you're going to make mistakes, make them aggressive, you know, because we can always throttle you back a little bit. But it's always hard to get players to get out of their comfort zone and try different things, be a different type of player, be a different type of person than, you know, maybe what they are. But we want to make sure that the guys that are aggressive and that's their nature and all that, you know, don't hold back. Because if they hold back, we're not going to get 100% of them. And so, you know, we just try to take the pressure off of them about making mistakes, because we're all going to make mistakes out here. I don't think in 45 years I've ever had a perfect drill. You know, there's always been a hiccup in it, you know, and then from a staff member, it's like, you know, take a step back a little bit, you know, because sometimes we get a knee-jerk reaction on a situation that wasn't perfectly done or it wasn't done right at all. And so we blow up a little bit sooner than probably what we should by, you know, just our, you know, human emotions, you know, God, how did he do that? Why did he do that? How come he didn't, you know, or whatever. And sometimes as a staff member, you just got to sit back and go, oh yeah, I remember. It's a hard game to learn. It's a harder game to play.
And it seems as if that message has taken firm hold with a lot of these young ball players that you have, because I can't tell you how many of them I've had come up to me and say, I need to be the best Bobby Witt Jr. I can be. Going third person, it really seems to as if it's resonated with a lot of these young players. But I got to imagine that wasn't the kind of messaging you were getting coming up. When you were coming up in this game, it was, here's how we do it, now do it this way.
Right, yeah, because I said so. Yeah, it was more along that lines where sometimes, I mean, you know, as far as coaches, I think we're a lot smarter than we used to be. I know I am, for sure. And to the point where you realize that, you know, everybody isn't created equal and everybody isn't the same. And what I can, you know, might be able to tell you, I'm going to have to find two or three different ways to tell the next guy, the next guy, and the next guy. So I think there's a lot more, you know, education in who you're dealing with at the beginning, and a lot more with social media on who the person is. And you learn a lot more about people than you ever did back in the day when I first started coaching. And because even when I first started, you know, it was kind of along those lines. It's like, you know, don't ask me, just do what I tell you to do, you know, and
seen, not heard, right?
Stuff. Yeah, exactly. So now you're dealing with a lot different personalities. And, you know, you almost have to be a psychologist and a pastor and a father and a mother and everything out here with different guys that you're working with a lot of times. But I think it's a lot more fun than it used to be back in the day, trying to be all those different types of personalities and different type of people, you know, that you're dealing with on an everyday basis. So in that regard, I think it's a lot better now than it used to be, for sure.
I think the answer might be a hard worker, but is there one trait that a player must have if they're going to learn at the feet of a Rusty Kuntz? What is that one non-negotiable trait that you demand from a ball player?
Yeah, energy. Yeah. Energy is the word. Yeah, because if you bring energy every day, you have a chance to get better. If I've got to crowbar it out of you, you're going to fall behind. Because I think that's one thing that you notice about professional baseball than any other sport or whatever, is that the guys that keep climbing and make it and they get closer and closer to the top, which is the major leagues, they bring one trait with them, and that's energy. They love to play. They love to be on a baseball field. They love to be in a uniform. They love to be a good teammate in the locker room. They love everything about baseball. That's what draws them to this, because just about everybody in professional baseball has a special tool that they were gifted with. It's the guys that take those special tools that love to show them off or love to improve them, and they give you that effort every single day, just because of the love of the game, you know. And that's the one thing that I think you're alluding to, is that what's the common denominator? Mm-hmm. Energy. Yeah. They love to be out here and they love to compete, yeah. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's one of many things that I marvel at, but especially around July and August, over the past few years, watching Salvador Perez walk into the clubhouse where you know the guy is dragging, and yet that energy is abundant. I hate to put you on the spot. Are there a few names that pop in your mind as far as the hardest workers, the best energy givers that you've been around?
Number one is Salvador Perez. I mean, I've never seen a guy. I mean, even when he was young and coming up through the minor leagues, I've never seen a guy love a game so much. I've never seen a guy that can't wait to get to the ballpark every single day. And I've never seen a guy love his teammates more than he does. And, I mean, it's been a privilege to be having been lucky enough to be around him all these years and watch him grow as a person, grow as a player, grow as a teammate, and now growing in his leadership role. And he's embracing that like I don't think I've ever seen anybody in the last 45 years that I've been around baseball. I've never seen a guy embrace all of those aspects the way Salvi does. And you're talking about a guy that wants to play 162 games every single day, and the way he brings his mindset, his energy to the locker room, and then all the preparation that he has to go through to even get on the field to play a catcher. I mean, I'm not talking about an outfielder or a third baseman or a first baseman. I'm talking about a catcher. To be able to want to be that guy, and here he is on Sports Illustrated, you know, looking over your shoulder at him, you know, and to be able to see that big smile every single day is what makes me want to come to the ballpark sooner than later, because, I mean, I enjoy being around him. I enjoy watching him work. I definitely enjoy watching him play because he's a kid. You know, and he's never lost that. And I know it's infectious because there's a lot of players that they get around him and you see their personalities change into that personality that he brings. And it's just, you know, one of those special guys that, you know, you run across, I think, once in a career. Mm-hmm. And I've been blessed enough to have been around Salvador when he was young, and now when he's now in a leadership older role that he's playing, and still be able to put up that kind of energy and those kind of numbers is just jaw dropping to me. But I'm glad I got to be around it and got to be able to see it, because man, he's like in the top you know, one or two of my favorite players of all times to be around, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, even the picture that you're alluding to, the Sports Illustrated cover after the championship in 2015, again, Salvi's the World Series MVP, and now here we are 7 years later, and it seems as if he's a complete, not a completely different player, a much better player than that one that we see celebrating here.
And he's climbing. Yeah, he's just getting bigger and better. And I mean, as an organization, we couldn't have a better person represent us. I mean, he's just everything that you would want a person to be, you know, both on and off the field, you know, a father, a husband, you know, just a teammate. I mean, he's like the total package of everything that you want a player to be. And yet he plays at such a high premium that it's just, okay, can it really be true?
Yeah.
You know, can you really be all of this and still be all of that? Yeah. And Salvador comes out here every single day, no matter who he runs in contact with or who he talks to or who he speaks with or whatever. It's just off the chart as far as what he's able to do. And I know as an organization, we couldn't be happier and prouder and luckier
right.
to have him represent us. That's for sure.
Well, speaking of that championship team, is there a moment in those runs? Is there a moment in that season where you went, oh, these guys got it? And from your championships as a player, as a coach, What comes to mind where you went, oh, these guys got something special here?
Yeah, I think two things come to mind. I think when Ace Ventura mm-hmm. hit Machado with Baltimore, and he came out to say something to Ventura, and now we're in a fight. And I think that was one of the turning moments that I remember. Pedro Grifol and I were talking about the other day, and we both agreed that, yeah, this was kind of one of those shining moments where we became a team,
yeah.
and we fought for each other, and we believed in each other, and we were able to, you know, have each other's back, and you know, all the things that you want a ball club to be. Well, it took that one moment mm-hmm. to kind of step back and go, ooh, this might be something special down the road. And then the second one was when Salvador Perez drove in Christian Colon for the wild card win. It was like something so electric on one swing of the bat, and having something just turn the page on an entire organization, you know, that I knew anyway, because I wasn't back in 85 and that. But a turning point for us is when Salvador got that clutch hit and drove in Christian Colon for the winning run. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, we're going to the playoffs. And just the energy that brought, not only from the ball team, but the city itself.
Yes.
And now we had going into kind of uncharted territory for us at that time. And it was like, okay, well, what's going to carry you through it? What's going to carry you to Anaheim? What's going to carry you to Toronto? You know, all these clubs that we played, then eventually San Francisco and the New York Mets. Well, I just remember coming together as a ball club, Salvador putting us in position that we're now in the playoffs. Well, let's show the entire world what we got as far as a club and that. And I think the enthusiasm, the energy, and then, you know, being able to believe that you belong there, I think it just hit an all-time high at the right time. Mm-hmm. And then when we went into the playoffs and we started, it was like, oh my gosh, well, nobody wanted to play us.
Right.
You know, everybody was like, oh God, they play a whole different style of game that we're not used to playing, and to be able to go out and execute.
Yeah.
And be that kind of team that we wanted to be, because we knew that's how it was going to have to be to win.
Yeah.
And just to be able to go out and do it. And it was like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. we just kept grinding, kept going. And then eventually we lost in the World Series to Bumgarner in San Francisco. And I think to a person in that locker room, I mean, there was nothing more exciting than winning but there was nothing more devastating than losing. And I was fortunate enough to have been through two World Series before that. And unfortunately, we won both of them. And the exhilaration of winning, and now all of a sudden you lose, and it was a whole lot more painful to lose it than it was ever exciting to win it. But I think everybody in that locker room looked around and go, we should have been the winners. We should have won that. And it was like almost San Francisco stole it from us. So I know when those guys came back, you know, and Salvador was a big part of that too. It's like, wait a minute. We're good. We can get back there, and we should have won it, and we will win it. And that was the whole attitude from the very get in spring training. Is like we had that chip on our shoulder that, okay, we had it, and then they stole it from us. We're going to get it back and make it our own. And they did. I mean, that whole season was just one that just bang, 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 bang. Anything and everything we needed and had to do, it all came together. And then when we went to the playoffs, it was the same way.
Was there a moment when things felt the most dire? Chiefs fans just went through this in the playoff game against the Bills. Mahomes goes down with 13 seconds left and forces overtime. Boy, there were a lot of them for the Royals in 14 and 15. Astros in Houston, Game 6 against the Blue Jays, the wild card game, the Angels game. When did things feel the most dire?
Right. I think it was the sixth inning. I think it was the sixth inning in Houston. And Morales came up and hit that chopper up the middle, and it took the bad hop. And it went, okay. Because one thing they always talk about, when you get into the playoffs, the one thing about it that's kind of on an equal playing field is that everybody's good. The pitching is really, really good. That's why they're there. Now, what's the separation? Well, the separation is the luck factor. The ball bounces your way and not their way. Okay, this guy comes in, he's wearing a cape. You know, this guy comes in and he's wearing, you know, that kind of thing. But I think when that hop bounced off and tipped off of Correa's glove and went into the outfield, we ended up scoring one or two runs at that time to tie it up or even go ahead or whatever it is. I think that was one of the shining moments that you went, oh, this is going to be something special. Yeah. Because those kind of plays don't happen if there's not a good ending at the end of it, you know, that kind of deal. And then the ball falling in against Toronto when Batista and, you know, the ball drops in between them, and then here comes the floodgates. Here we go. You know, those are the little things that have to happen if teams are that equally good. Those little things have to happen to get some kind of a separation. And then when they do and you take advantage of it, then you know that you're on the right track for something good. Yeah. But I just remember those two plays. And then, of course, Mike Jersey sending Lokane home on the Batista play down the right field line was a huge one. I mean, those were all – and then Hosmer, the dash, you know, from third to home on the play in the New York Mets. But all of those little plays come into your mind when you sit back and you look at it. You go, okay – what was the moment that you knew it was going to be special, or you knew you had a chance to win, or you knew that you were in the right place at the right time? Well, those three or four things happen, and you go, oh, there's a reason why these things are going on like they are.
There's one moment I always bring up on the radio as far as the moment I think things really started to change, and it could be incorrect. I'm wondering if you remember Lorenzo Cain on first base against the Detroit Tigers, and in Detroit, Victor Martinez tries to make pleasantries. Yeah, what do you remember about that?
Oh yeah, I remember standing there, and Lokane got to first base. And, you know, Victor is just a wonderful guy, and another one of those guys that just loves to play the game, and he was always, you know, always talking. You know, he never talked trash. He never said anything derogatory and stuff like that. He's just a well-liked person, a respected player in the game. And he just happened to catch Lokane on the wrong day. But for me personally, it was great to see it because Victor just asked him, hey, puppy, how you doing? You know, how's it going? You know, and Lokane just turned and snapped. He goes, we're tired of getting our freaking butt kicked by you guys. You know, we're not your friends anymore. We're not going to take it anymore. It's our time to take this division. It's our time to do something special. You know, so, you know, I'm not going to sit around and talk about, you know, how good you guys are and how nice you are and blah, blah, blah. You know, but to see that kind of reaction from Lo Kane, who the only thing that you picture Lo Kane having is that huge big smile, you know, that and now, and the dugout's close enough to first base in Detroit that you can hear the whole conversation there, you know. And I kind of turned around and I looked at the dugout after Lo Kane goes off, and you know, he didn't mean it to Victor personally, but just I mean, the Detroit Tigers at that time, they had our number. They were wearing us out. You know, they got Verlander, Scherzer, all these guys on the mound that were just shoving it one night after another. And finally, we just got a couple of wins together, and it's like, okay, wait a minute. We're tired of getting pushed around. We're tired of getting beat up. We're tired of, you know, and just see that reaction by Lo Kane. I mean, that totally fired up our bench. It's like, oh, my God, if Lo Kane can do this, maybe that's where we should be, you know. And so that was really a shining moment for me. It's like, oh my gosh, these guys are tired of getting beat up. It's time for them to start retaliating, give it some back, you know, that kind of deal. And then I just remember you just had to pedal to the metal after that. And it was like, okay, that was probably one of the moments where Lo Kane brought it out in us, and we just stepped on the gas and we just kept riding it.
Kane, Haas, Moose, just champions really throughout that clubhouse, and some highly touted prospects like a Hosmer and a Moustakas, which brings us to today's most highly touted prospect in Bobby Witt Jr. Now, I'm not going to ask you to make any comparisons, but as far as a 21-year-old is concerned, I can't imagine you've seen very, very many like him.
Not too many 20-year-olds that are 5-tool players that bring the kind of energy and the kind of smile and the kind of exuberance that a young player brings. And no swag, no attitude, no nothing. Just a baseball player going out and playing baseball and loving every minute of it, you know, and refreshing, absolutely. Last time I've seen a smile and energy like that was Griffey Jr. back in the day when 1989 when I first started. That was the first guy that I had in the outfield for his first 4 years with Seattle Mariners. And every day he'd bring the smile and the energy and the tool belt, you know, and he showed one tool, if not all five of them, every single day. And that's what Bobby Witt Jr. brings every day that he goes out there. And you know, and don't let the smile fool you.
Or the mustache,
yeah. Or, well, whatever you call that, yeah. Looks like he got into a mud hole or something. But anyway, because he, like Junior, not to compare him, but he, like Junior, they always had a great time and they always smiled because there was a lot of things in baseball that came very easy for them. But the one thing that they have in common is their competitiveness. Man, they compete. So you're taking all that talent, all that energy, all that youth, and now you're bringing the competitive into it too? Yeah, you got a pretty good player on your hands.
Well, I mean, Ken Griffey Jr., that's my wheelhouse. That's the guy that we all wanted to be in the neighborhood growing up. And yeah, with that tool belt, that tool box, yeah, it always seemed easy. And even the things that didn't, let me put it this way. I wouldn't have thought competitiveness would have been the first thing that you bring up when talking about Ken Griffey Jr., but competitiveness, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer too?
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Because, I mean, yeah, he had a great time because he had so much to work with. I mean, he was blessed with everything. Mm-hmm. But to keep it, he had to work hard, and that's what he did. And, man, when the bell rang at 7 o'clock and it was game time, the hat went forward and so did the attitude. I mean, he was, yeah.
Was he a leader? Did he have that leadership skill like it appears Bobby has?
Not like Salvador. I mean, Junior was very soft-spoken. He didn't say a lot of words. He wasn't a rah-rah guy for sure. He led by example. He was more of a Alex Gordon type of guy. You know, in the locker room, he was a big jokester. He was a big kidder. You know, he loved his teammates. You know, he had fun with them. When you know he had the ability to sense that, you know, when things were getting kind of tight, you know, how to loosen it up a little bit, you know, by doing whatever he does, you know, whatever a 19-year-old does. Yeah, right. But yeah, I mean, all you had to do is kind of sit back and watch him compete and play every single day. And, you know, other than when he ran into the wall and broke his wrist, and oh, by the way, he was back in about 8 weeks, swinging a bat and putting up more numbers. It's crazy, yeah. But you know, he wasn't that guy that was going to step up and take the mic and or call his teammates out and yeah, let's go, you know. But no, he got dressed, put his hat on backwards, walked out every day and played,
yeah,
and let the numbers and anything that he brought had to bring that day, yeah, come forward. And he was just that kind of a player, you know. He just led by example, and he did a pretty damn good job of it.
Final thing, Rusty Kuhn's kind enough to join us here on 610 Sports Radio. Just your health of the organization. You've served in quite a few roles for this Royals organization, and as we prepare for hopefully another postseason run, World Series championships in the near future, what do you think Royals fans need to know about the power structure, the health of their favorite baseball organization?
Yeah, I think it's special right now. I know one thing. I mean, you know, the front office is second to none. I mean, the culture that they've developed here and the people that are running it and the people that are showing us what they expect, what they would like everybody to do, all this kind of stuff, is second to none that I've ever been around in all the organizations I've ever been. I mean, the amount of time and energy and effort that they all put together is I just can't compare it to any other place that I've been to. That's how special the people are upstairs. But I know we're in good hands with Mike Matheny as a manager, and he's put together a great staff. I mean, he really has. And they know kind of the heartbeat of our club. They know what they're asking the players to be and what they want them to become and how they want to how they want them all to contribute, you know, to one direction that we're and our scouting department has done a wonderful job the last, I don't know how many drafts in a row now, about getting us the type of players that are championship players. And you can tell by the number of arms that you walk out there, it's just a laundry list of names, and they all compete. They all have stuff. They all want to become major league players. They're all coachable. They all, you know, they run in the same kind of mind frame, and it's just so much easier when you have that kind of players to work with, because they're all pulling for the same result, and that's to win a championship here. Mm-hmm. So when you're starting with a front office leadership from the big league and the type of players that our scouts are getting, and then you add on our player development, I mean, my gosh, I've never been around better guys that work their butts off to make sure our players get better and can contribute and elevate through the system and become major league players to help us win that championship. And that's what they're all dedicated to do. And it's refreshing to come in to an environment like that on an everyday basis where baseball is number one. Yeah. And you check your ego at the door, you check your problems at the door, you check all that. When you walk through the door, it's all about making Kansas City Royal baseball players a champion again, you know, and so it's a great environment to be in here. It's a great time to be a Royal, and the people that are running it, you know, from the top to the bottom, are all in it to win it. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're all willing to do whatever it takes and you know, go the extra yard, you know, all the cliches you want to add that you want an organization to be, well, we're living it right now. And it's so much fun to come to the ballpark every day and go through it, for sure.
Rusty, thank you very much for the time.
Well, thanks for asking. I appreciate you having me.